Last August 4th, an explosion blew out the windows of an apartment in the Turkish coastal city of Antalya. Within a couple of days, Turkish authorities unraveled a plot to bomb an Israeli cruise ship and arrested two Al-Qaeda operatives. After lengthy interrogation, one of them not only admitted to his role in the plot, but described his long career in terrorism. Among other things, Turkish authorities say he planned the truck bomb that killed 57 people in Istanbul in 2003, participated in the so-called Millennium Plot to attack hotels in Amman, Jordan, and commanded insurgent forces in a battle against U.S. forces in Fallujah. Carl Vick of The Washington Post wrote about this story in yesterday's editions. He joins us now on the phone from Istanbul. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks.
So who is Luay Saka?
He's this guy you've just described. He's someone who apparently was operating, you know, in the shadows for, well, his attorney says something like 15 years, certainly for the last 7 or 8 years in and out of Turkey. He was a very sort of central logistician, someone who could sort of get jihadi volunteers through this country and through Iran, through Pakistan, to training camps in Afghanistan, and help them get into Chechnya. And now, since the invasion of Iraq, he's been working through Syria and Turkey and Syria and getting guys into Iraq until last year sometime, when he decided that his time there was up, that he was known to American or Western intelligence, and then he decided to sort of launch this going away party for himself, this attack on this cruise ship.
Tell us about what he actually planned to do. That was, of course, a bomb he was building in his apartment.
It was a big bomb. He'd rented this apartment, which overlooked a marina in Antalya, which is a big. It's sort of the capital of summer Turkey. It's in the Turkish Riviera, they call it. It's a place that's popular with a lot of people. It gets a lot of international tourists, and it gets Israeli cruise ships. Israelis can't, you know, they're not welcome in a lot of the Middle East because it's the Arab Middle East, and they don't want Israelis around. But Turkey it's a Muslim nation that has good relations with Israel, and so there's always Israeli tourists there. And he had the idea to fill this boat that he had in the marina below the apartment with explosives. It's like a 30-foot power boat, and ram it, or it's not entirely clear quite how he planned to sink the cruise ship. He had a second villa that was about 10 miles down the coast, and all the mechanics of what was going to happen that day isn't clear, but he wanted to do it at sea so that he wouldn't be killing Turks, he said.
Now, his lifestyle in that city, this was a high-rise apartment building he was in, and often seen, sitting around the pool with his girlfriend sipping beer. It seemed like a lot of the same traits that some of the 9/11 plotters showed in the United States when they did things like, for example, visit strip clubs.
Yeah, exactly. This is you know, and it's really unclear. I mean, the Al Qaeda training manuals and their tradecraft, you know, their spycraft, is that they're allowed. You know, they say they're very devout, and they're doing this as a route to heaven and to serve their notion of jihad, which many of them equate with worship. But apparently, they're given some sort of operational leeway to appear undercover and sort of enjoy the fruits of this world. This guy had, yeah, the people in this apartment saw him with this, you know, young girl, and he had a wife and kids back in Syria. He'd been visiting before, so it's not entirely clear what was going on, but it looked like he was enjoying his work there toward the end.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of his, his activities, one of the things that people have wondered a lot about was the extent of contact and, intermingling between the old Al Qaeda, if you will, the people who met in Afghanistan and went to camps there and Osama bin Laden, and Mr. Zarqawi, who's of course in Iraq, a Jordanian, and sort of the new Al Qaeda. This was a man, Saka, who played in both camps.
Yeah, he seemed to. It's a little bit fuzzy, and it may be a deliberate fuzziness. But for instance, in the Istanbul bombings, which Saka apparently described some role in, and now disavows. But it appears that he got $50,000 of the $150,000 from Zarqawi, this is money that financed these four truck bombs a couple of years ago here. And the rest seems to have come from Al-Qaeda and from Saudi sympathizers to Al-Qaeda that he delivered. The plot itself, so clearly Zarqawi knew about it, but he was not yet with Al-Qaeda. He's now with a group called Al-Qaeda in Iraq. But you remember about a year and a half ago, it was very significant when he announced that he was now part of Al-Qaeda and pledging fealty to Osama bin Laden. But the original Istanbul plot and the idea to strike Turkey was something that bin Laden himself had in August 2001, about a month before 9/11, specifically personally authorized to some of the plotters. So, yeah, you're right. There's sort of this network, these sort of intermingling grids where sometimes they overlap in making common cause and even operationally, and sometimes they're just all pointed in the same direction.
Also, this man revealed all these details about his life after long interrogation by Turkish authorities. Are we to believe everything he says?
A lot of it lines up. The Turks believe a lot of it. He said a lot of things and then declined to sign the statement on the advice of his attorney, who the Turkish authorities were trying to implicate. A lot of what he says checks out. I talked to people who go in and out of Fallujah who had heard of him, who said he was there and known as a pretty senior person with Zarqawi. He was indicted along with Zarqawi for the Millennium Plot, that was supposed to destroy an Amman hotel and target some tourist sites frequented by Christians in the year on December 31st, 2000, 1999. So a lot of what he, and he's implicated by other people who are now standing trial in the Istanbul bombing. So, yeah, it does, by and large, what he says does seem to be corroborated by other circumstances and testimonies.
Including by, as you mentioned earlier, by his own lawyer.
Yeah, his lawyer is definitely of the same beliefs. He's a bearded guy who handles a lot of Islamist clients and who describes himself as basically a radical Muslim, who's a member in good standing in the bar, who is very careful to stay within the law here, and who I spent a fair amount of time with, and is a rational and straightforward person, and talked about how Sakao wants to sort of talk straight, but for reasons that aren't entirely clear, he's gone a little bit back and forth on what he will admit to in court and what's legally binding. I assume that there's some concern about betraying other operations or an organization, the Al-Qaeda organization, but not quite clear why he's leaning both ways.
And that leads to another question, which is, has his information been made available to American authorities who may want to know what he knows about what's going on inside Iraq?
I know that, according to his lawyer and reports in the Turkish press, at least once, I think twice, CIA people who are assumed to be CIA, American intelligence people, have been to his prison cell being held in a high-security place here in Istanbul, and have talked to him. And I'm told that they got along well. Their approach to him was gentlemanly and businesslike and was appreciated. I don't know if he said, I don't know what he told him.
How much do we know about one of the things you wrote about was his experience sort of as a commander during the first battle of Fallujah, if you will. What more do we know about what he did there?
He did, you might remember there were two assaults on Fallujah. The first was in March or April 2004, and it was after those contractors were attacked and cut up and their bodies were burned and hung on that bridge, and everyone was outraged. And someone, I think the story is that President Bush himself ordered an offensive in retaliation for that. It got so far, and at the same time, the Shiites were starting their insurgency in the south, and that offensive was called off. But during that time, Sakash showed up with some other people from Turkey. He then stayed while Fallujah became, really an insurgent town, and Zarqawi was one of the people sort of running the place. And in that time, he was a fairly senior commander. I don't know what his field abilities are, but he was somebody who was, according to former fighters, calling in coordinates for mortar attacks on U.S. bases around Iraq, and played a big role in a what was a fairly significant attack on Abu Ghraib prison.
And finally, let me ask you if he'd been involved in what you describe as running these rat lines, you know, getting operatives and money and, you know, identity cards and that sort of thing to various people in various places. Have Turkish authorities been able to follow up on his information and roll up other members of the organization?
This is something, the short answer to that is I don't know. When they found this burned out apartment, among the things that survived the fire was about 7 false IDs, including a couple of Tunisian passports, all in with his picture in them. He was really good at this, and this is what he'd been doing in Turkey since 1998. Since Turkey has always been, because of where it is geographically, a real crossroads for everyone going all over this region. And he was someone who facilitated that with these false IDs, and he gets people in and out through Syria. He's from northern Syria, which is the sort of preferred route for people, for fighters trying to join. Even if you're coming from Saudi Arabia, which also borders Iraq, Saudis are going up into Syria to come in through established routes, and he was quite expert at that.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Carl Vick, thanks very much. We appreciate your time.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Carl Vick, foreign correspondent for The Washington Post, speaking with us from Istanbul. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.